Happy birthday to Landscaping Your Life with Alison Smith podcast. It's two. Who knew? Who knew 2 years ago that I'd still be here sharing insights to help you get back on track? I'm today sitting outside. I'm the other side of the Forth than perhaps I normally am, so I'm closer to Edinburgh. It's blue sky. I've got the sea lapping beside me, and I thought what I'd do is take you on a journey and share with you more about the Landscaping Your Life journey in terms of why I do it, where it originated, and share with you some highlights, I suppose, of real stories of when it's really worked for other people. I hope to inspire you to have a delve into all of the other episodes and try some out for yourself. Landscaping Your Life first started in the mid-90s when I was in procurement, in purchasing, and I was wanting to explain to other people in the business, other business managers, why they needed to look after suppliers, because we noticed they weren't. We were quite frustrated that we'd put a contract in place and then the supplier wouldn't deliver on that promise. And it wasn't down to the supplier as quite often. It was as much to how we related to the supplier and what we did with it. And, you know, we could talk till we were, I don't know, till the cows came home about why supplier management was a good thing and, you know, share with them all these sort of tools and techniques about supplier management. And they'd sort of glaze over, really. Until I realised that, well, hang on a minute, certainly here in the UK, most people have either got a garden, visited a garden, know enough about gardens to understand the premise that you can't just plonk a plant wherever you like. It needs to have the right conditions. You know, some like shade, some don't like shade. Some soil conditions do or don't work for different plants. You're going to need to prune plants. You might need to weed. You might need to mow the lawn. We even understand that some plants might need time in the greenhouse. Quite often, certainly in the summer, we might need to water the plants. And so what I realised was when I said, well, all you know about gardening, to be true about gardening, is true about supplier management, then suddenly these managers went, oh my God, that explains why I've got problem suppliers, because I'm plonking them anywhere, not giving them any attention, they're getting a bit unruly. Oh yeah, I'm not pruning them, they're not even in the right place. And so suddenly we went from something that people weren't interested in and not paying much attention to, because we used something they could relate to, then suddenly they were paying attention to what we were saying. And that was in the mid-90s. And then I realised not long after that that the metaphor could be expanded, that instead of gardens we could look at landscapes more generally, and instead of just supplier management we could look at life more generally. And therefore that's where Landscaping Your Life was first developed in the early 2000s, where it's using nature's landscapes as a metaphor for our lives. Now, one of the reasons that metaphors work is if you think about any problem or any situation where you're struggling to find a solution, there's a few things going on. One, if the solution was easy, you'd have already found it and be taking that appropriate action. So the solution isn't as obvious as one would like. And currently, the data we've got isn't enabling us to find that solution. And sometimes when we talk to other people, it's as if we use the same data and go round and round and round in circles, reinforcing the data that we know isn't going to give us a solution. It's as if, oh, I've got a problem with somebody, and you'll tell other people all about how awkward that person is, and, well, they said this, and then they said that, and I'm not doing that, and you can get quite indignant about, no, it's them at fault, not me. Which in some respects reinforces the fact that there isn't anything that we can do, that I'm stuck, there isn't anything I can do different. And using metaphor enables us to sort of leave that data to one side. We've got the data, but we're not going to analyse it, we're not going to dive into it, we're not going to sort of uncover more and more about that data. we're going to look at the patterns about the situation, because quite often it's the patterns that are actually the issue. It's not the fact that this person's ignoring us necessarily. It's about, this is the 15th person that's ignoring us. So what is it about our relationship with all of these people that are ignoring us that we need to change in order to facilitate the change in this particular situation that we're struggling with now? And that's where using nature helps, because we're sending, as I say, our logic and the data and the situation on a coffee break. We're saying, we'll come back to your logical thinking, we'll come back to you the situation, but at the moment I just want to look at patterns of behaviour, patterns of thinking. I want to use a metaphor in order to try and look at the situation from a different perspective. Whether that's a higher perspective, a deeper perspective, a look more from the left, more from the right, it's as if when we're stuck, we're only seeing, say, I don't know, 40 degrees of the situation. And using a landscape enables us to more fully look at it 360 degrees. Now, there's lots of different ways that we can use nature as a metaphor, and I'm just going to give you some examples, and are the examples that relate really to other episodes of the podcast, so that if I mention something, you can go, oh, right, yeah, I'll go and have a look at that episode to uncover it more. In my book, Can't See the Wood for the Trees, I share a lot more different techniques and tools and techniques of how to use nature, but they're not always something that are as easily shareable in a podcast, but nevertheless in a book it's much easier to give you instructions, etc. There are a few things that you need to do though first. One is to fully dive into the metaphor. So when I'm talking about, I don't know, I'm here at the sea, so if I'm talking about treading water, I want you to fully imagine treading water in the sea. I don't want you to keep going back to the situation, you know, the work situation where you feel like you're treading water and saying, oh, well, Alison's just said I need to put my foot down. This is what it means in the real life situation. That's never going to allow you to fully see 360 degrees, because it's as if you see another 5 degrees and then you go and add those 5 degrees to the 40 you already knew. And then try and act as if that 45 degrees is going to have the solution. Whereas what you're better off doing is adding another five degrees of insight, adding another 5 degrees, adding another 5 degrees, until you've got a lot more than 40 degrees of observation about the metaphor. And then you can come back and say, so what does that really mean in the situation that I'm thinking about? So I think that's the one thing that, if I'm working with people, I'm there with you, that I end up having to get you to stop doing, because people will go, oh yeah, of course, that means I need to ring that person up. We'll worry about that later. Let's dive into the metaphor. Let's give our creative mind, the part of our brain that thinks in metaphors, a bit of time to fully explore this situation. Because what we're not wanting to do is sort of jump between logical thinking and then creative thinking, logical thinking and then creative thinking. Or, as I say, our inner wisdom. This is the opportunity for our inner wisdom to nudge us to notice patterns. And therefore, what we don't want to do is cut that inner wisdom off by going, oh yes, I know, logical thinking knows what you mean, therefore I'm going to do this. So let me give you a few examples that I share quite often when I'm a guest on other people's podcasts that seems to resonate for others and bring the process alive. So one of the examples is where a business leader, we were out in a wood and they said, oh, I feel like I'm going round in circles about this situation. And so what I did was I asked them to walk in the circle in the wood that they felt best represented the circling they were doing in the situation. So they're walking around in circles. And I asked them, and I suppose what I'm doing is I'm jumping to the solution in some respects, whereas there will have been lots of other conversations we had about the circling in terms of me asking them to speed the circling up, change direction, make it smaller, make it bigger. And there is a podcast, so if you feel like you're going around in circles, I'd heavily recommend that you go to that episode and to just follow the instructions there. But in this particular instance, one of the questions I asked the walker was, where do you want to get to? And the answer was immediate. It's like, oh, I just want to get there. They knew instantly what direction. There wasn't any dithering. So, which posed the question, well, why are you circling if you know you want to go in that direction? Now, because we're not caught up in all the data of the current situation, it was much easier for me to then say to him, so why don't you just try going in that direction? So that's what he did. He walked in the direction that he'd pointed to. And he got about 100 metres away from where we'd been circling. And then he started to go, oh, but have I made the wrong decision? You know, I've left everybody else behind. Oh, I don't know, perhaps I'll go back to where we started. And it's as if after 100 metres, he'd lost sort of conviction in his own belief. Even though every time I said to him, where do you want to go? He kept saying that same direction. There was no doubt. I mean, the confidence level, if anybody else had said, how confident does this person sound about this as an outcome that they want? They'd have said 100%. However, we're looking at patterns. So he knows where he wants to get to, but the pattern is that he has doubt. So we went back to the original circling place, and then he looked in the completely opposite direction to where he'd said he wanted to go, and saw a bridge at the right at the end of the path, and said, oh, well, that looks interesting, perhaps we should try that. And it enabled us to explore how in his life and in the situation that he was dealing with, was he, I suppose, keep doubting, even though he was really sure where he wanted to get to and what he wanted to do, once he started sort of making any action towards that outcome, the doubt, he would allow the doubt to set in, and then he'd allow himself, even more importantly, to get distracted by other shiny things. And at the time, I remember saying that, you know, he was a bit like a magpie, that it's the next shiny thing was the thing that was attracting him, rather than absolutely committing to where he wanted to be. And so in that instance, the outcome was him coming up with an action plan to achieve what he wanted to. He realised that he was just distracting himself, that there was no doubt about what he wanted to do. And therefore, the action plan was about making a plan that he could commit to get to what he wanted to do in his career. That last example was me with the person in the wood. The next example is where I was at home in the office, and the other person was in Florida walking around a landscape, and therefore I was asking them questions. Every now and again they'd stop and they'd show me a picture of where they were. I might ask them questions about what they could see. So I couldn't see as much of the landscape as they could, and it required me to ask them questions. And at one part of it, so they did do a little bit of circling, but one part of it was about couldn't see the wood for the trees, and they were in a wood. So, and again I said, so where do you want to get to? And again, just like the circling person, they said, oh, I can see. And there was they turned the camera around so that they could show me this tree that was the other side of the wood. And they said, well, that represents, I know where I want to get to. And in this instance, it was as if they were going through a path through the wood, and they knew they needed to get to the wood. But every time they came to a path, another path, they'd sort of divert and go down this path, thinking that that might possibly be better. And so again, the outcome for them was, oh, crikey, I just need to get the plan in place. I know what I want to do. I just need to do it and stop allowing myself to get distracted. Now, both of those, in some respects, bypass a lot of the landscaping alive process, because it presupposes that the language you're using isn't actually accurate, that it isn't the fact that they can't see the wood for the trees. It was they were allowing those trees and woods to be a distraction. Again, like the circling was a distraction. And sometimes that's not the case when we're going through nature. So other occasions, when somebody can't see the wood for the trees. We have had to explore the paths. And so somebody recently felt like they were at a crossroads. And again, what we were doing was, at every crossroads, we stopped. So we were in the Botanical Gardens in Edinburgh, and we'd stop at every crossroad, and I'd sort of say, which direction do you want to go? And the pattern that emerged was the fact that they always chose the direction that had no directions. There were no signposts. And funnily enough, we seemed to find lots of crossroads where there weren't directions. But so you might come one, there might be three options, either to go back the way we've come, or three other options. Two of them had got signposts and one hadn't. And of course, the pattern that we observed was the fact that the person always chose the one that didn't have directions. And that therefore led to a conversation about how is that appropriate to the situation in hand? How does that add value to the situation? How does that enable you to make better decisions going forward? Because I think in that instance, the decision that they were trying to make was they felt like they were being forced down a route that was a bit like those ones where the signposts were already in place, whereas actually they're the sort of person that wants to write the signposts and give people and go where nobody's gone before and do the exploring and then come back and share it with others. And that was a huge insight to them about what made them tick, why they were struggling in the current situation that we were talking about, and what the solution might be and what actions they could take in terms of having conversations with other people. And I think that's the beauty of using nature. It's as if patterns are more easily able to be seen. And therefore we can then, you know, it's not a pattern about this current situation. It's quite often a pattern that we've had all our lives, or certainly for some time, and we're doing it in more than one situation. And therefore it enables us to look at the pattern and work on the pattern rather than think it's anything about this current problem that we're looking at. Another favourite of mine and other people that listen to the podcast and my video blogs on landscaping your life in YouTube is putting the stick down you're beating yourself up with. And I think what I like about this is the fact that over time the insight has grown for me about how to put the stick down, because I've tried to embody it many times. And this is why I love encouraging you, if you're at a crossroads, go and find a crossroads in nature. If you want to turn a corner, oh my God. If somebody says to me they want to turn a corner, and I go, you know, we're out for a walk, and I go, let's go and find a corner to turn. I always think, perhaps this is the time the person's not going to get anything from doing it. And never yet has that happened. There's always insight where it's, you've got to try it to understand what I mean. It's so difficult to explain. But anyway, going back to the stick putting down, I do encourage people to embody. So, you know, we quite often say, oh, I'm beating myself up with a stick. So I went out once, there's a video blog on YouTube of me putting the sticks down. What I hadn't realised at the time, and it's only subsequently that I've noticed, is in order to beat yourself up, you have to have picked up the sticks first. And I remember being at a car park at the top of a hill and noticing, oh, there weren't any sticks up here because there weren't any trees. And yet, oh yeah, but I've got some sticks. I've still got some sticks with me because I picked them up earlier in order to have them to beat myself up with at some point in the future. If you're someone that constantly beats yourself up, overly critical of yourself, I can't recommend highly enough going out into nature and first picking up a number of sticks and just noticing what you notice when you're picking up the sticks. Are they little sticks, big sticks? Are they numerous sticks? Are they long sticks? Just notice what you notice about the sticks. And then make a decision, a commitment to put those sticks down. Now, what I've heard back from people is, having done this process, what happens next time they start to be overly critical of themselves? They remember the process, and before they even start to criticise, they sort of put the stick down and go, I'm choosing not to be critical. Now, in this fairly short, and it's a bit longer than normal, but in this fairly short episode, what I hope I've done is given you an example of how rich going out into nature is in terms of helping you get new perspectives, see a situation from new vantage points, so that you can uncover things that are currently hidden from view. It's a bit like me saying, you know, have a higher vantage point. And when I went up a hill behind my house, I didn't really go high enough. And so all I was seeing was the vantage point that I could see from my house, but just a little higher. And so sometimes we need to have an even higher vantage point that gives us that 360 degrees view I was talking about, rather than going down there, you know, being a bit further down the hill. It might be high, but you've still only got that 40 degree of view. Now, in terms of the podcast, I'd highly recommend that you just have a look at the titles of the episodes and pick an episode that resonates with how you're feeling and just follow on with what I'm saying. I would say that the podcasts between episodes 22 and 41 are, there's just one theme for every podcast. And I think for me, that was when I felt like I'd sort of got into my stride. Series 3 has been interrupted a little bit with a family bereavement. And also the fact that I was doing poems and making a podcast about the poems. And I think what I'm going to do is go back to going out into nature and noticing what I notice, and also then using a poem at the end rather than it making it about the poem. But we'll see. You know, podcasts evolve. And therefore, if you've got a favourite podcast, why not let me know so that I can, you know, keep doing what you know works, rather than me just keep trying different things, because perhaps I'm a bit like that person who was going down those paths with no signposts. I like to keep experimenting, but that might not be helpful for you. You might be going, no, I need you to go back to those sorts of podcasts. So thank you for listening to this second birthday episode. I'm hoping to get back into more regular podcasts again. So yeah, do like the podcast. Do speak about it, do leave a comment, do review it, follow it, tell other people about it. But I suppose more importantly, when you've got a problem and you'd like new insight, come back, pick an episode, follow, and hopefully you'll get insight about how to get unstuck. Because ultimately, that's what I get great pleasure at, which is helping other people get back on track.